Depression, the Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. Chapter 8, Stress Without Distress. This chapter will look at additional treatments for stress and anxiety that are in the category of self-help. Also, cautions in taking certain drugs that are commonly used to treat stress and anxiety are pointed out. Lifestyle factors are presented that have been proven to be amazingly effective in combating these mental disorders. We will see in this chapter that there are many approaches for dealing with stress that can be helpful. Many of those that are most valuable are underutilized. I introduce some of them in my book, Proof Positive, in the chapter on stress. Nonetheless, many may want me to go beyond the points I made there. This chapter significantly expands on my previous work. For those who have not read Proof Positive, I will reiterate some of the important points here. I spelled out the important distinction between stress and stressors in the previous chapter. This understanding lays the groundwork for a self-examination for each of us in determining the stressors that are present in our own personal lives. Identifying your own stressors. To identify your own life stressors, it is best done in solitude with no distractions. With the TV, radio, and CD player off, with a phone unplugged, and no one else around, take some time to reflect on your own life. Specifically, what things are currently bothering you? What do you consider to be stressors in your life? A constructive way to uncover the different types of stressors is to ask the same questions journalists ask when writing a story for the news media. They want answers to the 5 W's: who, what, when, where, and why. Examine each of these areas as they relate to your own life. For example, who in your life is a stressor? Or in what situations does he or she increase your stress level? A woman may feel that she has a wonderful husband, but it still stresses her when he turns the temperature down 5 degrees at bedtime. Perhaps a stressful when and where is the morning commute through hectic traffic. After you've identified your major stressors, what is the next step? You basically have the option of two strategies for dealing with each of them. The first option is to avoid or remove a stressor. Since this is not always possible or desirable, the second option is what I call healthy adaptation. Two choices for combating a stressor. I will illustrate these two options with a hypothetical scenario. Let's say a new neighbor moves into the apartment next to yours. You go out of your way to make him feel welcome. You knock on his door with a cheery greeting, some fresh baked goods, and an offer to help with a move. Instead of accepting your kindness, he refuses your cooking and offer of assistance. He sullenly responds, "So, you live next door, huh? Well, let's keep out of each other's way and we'll get along just fine." With that, he closes the door. You're pretty out of sorts when you go to bed that night at your usual midnight hour. Your mood is not helped by the pounding rock and roll music that jars you out of sleep at 4 a.m. It is the new neighbor. Despite your aggravation, you decide to keep your cool and follow his advice to keep out of each other's way. After 4 mornings in a row with rock music blasting at 4 a.m., you realize you have a major stressor in your life. How can you constructively deal with it? Healthy adaptation. Remember, there are two basic strategies. First, you can avoid or remove the stressor, or second, you can make a healthy adaptation. Taking the first strategy, you could call the landlord and try to get your neighbor to change his ways, or you could take the direct approach and confront the neighbor. If you fear retaliation, another way to avoid or remove the stressor would be for you to move from your apartment. Each of these options may or may not work, although each would carry with it some consequences that might bring new stresses. Taking the healthy adaptation route, you respond in a way to get the stressor to work for you. Let's say you've been thinking that your midnight retirement hour is too late anyway. Good thinking. Since your evening schedule is flexible, you plan to crawl into bed at 9 p.m. You decide to use the 4 a.m. rock music as your alarm clock, though it is not your favorite choice when it comes to music styles. After you arise, you go to a quiet part of the apartment and take time for some spiritual reading, prayer, and reflection. Then you get some much-needed exercise and follow with a shower and a good breakfast. You still have plenty of time to arrive at work on time. Whether waking up at 4 a.m. sounds like a viable strategy in your life or not, it illustrates the point. To the extent that you can take a stressor and use it in some way to work for you, you demonstrate a healthy adaptation. Healthy adaptation is very different from merely ignoring a stressor. If the rock music keeps you awake, you really cannot ignore it. Even if you sleep intermittently with a resonating accompaniment, you're likely to become extremely frustrated because of impaired sleep. Take note that ignoring a stressor is rarely a healthy response. However, when a seemingly overwhelming stressor confronts you, particularly on either side of the social, mental, or spiritual level, sometimes the best option may be to ignore it. If you are so stressed that constructive options are not apparent, ignoring the presence of the stressor may allow you to progress from the stage of alarm to that of resistance. With this approach, you can then look at more constructive ways to adapt. When it comes to physical stressors like noise, unwanted music, or the pain of illness, there is sometimes no way to ignore them. Avoiding the stressor by fleeing. There are other unhealthy ways to deal with stressors. Another is escapism. This technique may find you making a 4 a.m. call to your 24-hour travel agency. You impulsively reserve a seat on the next plane to Tahiti. While you're soaking up the sun on the exotic beach, it may seem that escape has worked to your advantage. You are free from the raucous neighbor and are really enjoying yourself. However, when you return home, the 4 a.m. concert continues unabated and reality sets in. You're fired from your job for an unapproved absence, and the credit card bill from the trip arrives. In no time, your stress level is higher than it ever was. Indeed, escapism is not an optimal way to respond to a stressor. It can take a higher toll on your health than the original stressor did. It is easy to see escapism as the only strategy to buy some time in the face of an overwhelming situation, but the end results can be devastating. Many see escapism as an extension of ignoring a stressor. When you mentally ignore a stressor, you remain in the environment where the stressor is confronting you without addressing it. The stressor continues to work on your physiology, no matter how much you think you're ignoring it. When you physically escape from a stressor's sphere of influence, your body can get some respite. The trip to Tahiti illustrates this. Yet, if the escape was impulsive, it often includes a hefty price tag. Most of the time, escapism occurs only on a mental level and is an extension of ignoring the stressor. The person remains in the presence of the stressor, but turns to a mind-altering escape to help forget about its presence. Such escape can be as diverse as watching television or taking a mixed drink. This type of escapism is worse than a futile attempt to ignore the stressor. Since you're still in the stressor's domain, the effects of stress on your body are perpetuated and the escape routes themselves are bad for your body and mind, sapping your reserves further. To be more specific, alcohol impairs the brain's frontal lobe, where decision-making and constructive solutions are based. Viewing television, even in its highest form, takes time away from activities such as exercise that could help enhance your coping reserves or diffuse stress. More on exercise later. Sometimes avoiding or removing a stressor is relatively easy. Other times it is difficult or impossible. Consider the case of a nicotine addict. After 3 unsuccessful attempts at quitting cigarettes, Bill recognized that every relapse occurred when he went to a bar for a few drinks after work. Clearly, he recognized that drinking alcohol in a bar is a significant stressor for him. After all, it has continued to undermine his best resolutions to put smoking behind him. If his jaunts to the bar are a rare occurrence, it may be relatively easy for Bill to decide to completely avoid that questionable environment. Consider Sue. She's having problems with a fellow manager. Even though she and Renee are in equal positions in the business, their mutual disrespect is obvious. They are rarely in the same meeting without a subtle undercurrent of demeaning insinuations. Clearly, Sue's stressful predicament is harder to deal with than Bill's smoking problem, since she can't avoid or remove a workplace stressor. She could try covert practices to get Renee fired, but it is typically a costly process, both in terms of time and effort, not to mention the emotional resources expended. Often, the only prompt way to remove workplace stressors is to quit the job, although changing shifts, transfers, and other options are sometimes available. When confronted with the choice of walking away from the job or putting up with a stressor, many people opt for the latter. The result can take a devastating physical and emotional toll. These cases show a clear need for option 2, healthy adaptation. Let's examine how we can increase the likelihood of identifying and implementing constructive options. Plan properly. Proper planning and organization are key parts to healthy adaptation, since impulsive solutions typically fail and are neither healthy nor adaptive. Proper planning involves first determining what it will take to implement a strategy before you begin. If the option appears both reasonable and viable, then you can move to the next step in the planning process, specifically determining the optimal strategy to put into place. Proper planning and organization are also important ways to avoid stressors. You likely can identify times in your life where you were confronted with major stressors only because you failed to plan properly. For example, you are stressed when you are late to work because of forgetting your lunch and having to go back. Long-range systematic stress management. As we've discussed, the optimal ways of dealing with stressors include avoiding them, removing them, or getting them to work for you through healthy adaptation. If none of these approaches work in your specific circumstances, are there constructive steps that you can take to maintain low stress levels in the future on an ongoing basis? Fortunately, there are additional steps that can be taken that will have an ongoing effect in combating stress. The most powerful include lifestyle habits that help decrease the effects of stress, enabling us to live successfully in the presence of stressors. A 4-point lifestyle attack on reducing stress. Let's look at a description of lifestyle that will reduce stress on an ongoing basis. A number of established stress-relieving practices could be integrated into our daily routine that will help us in all aspects of our being. Stress affects us in all these aspects: physical, mental, spiritual, and social. Strategies to deal with stress need to address each of these 4 aspects. In this section of the chapter, we will look at each of them. The first one is the physical aspect. A physically healthy lifestyle reduces stress. A physically healthy lifestyle is of great value in dealing with stress. The more efficiently your body functions, the better you will be able to have the coping resources that you need. A healthy body helps give you the upper hand in coping with lifestyle stresses. Even if exposed to stressors that you have not yet removed or adapted to, better physical health will help to shield you from the health-robbing effects of these stressors. Practices that will improve and maintain physical health are proper nutrition, regular physical exercise, avoidance of legal drugs such as nicotine, caffeine, and alcohol, and minimizing unnecessary prescriptions and over-the-counter medications. One critical element of a healthy lifestyle is proper nutrition. In the book Proof Positive, I go to great lengths to describe optimal diet and nutritional strategies. In a nutshell, this involves 9 key areas. These are adopting a plant-based vegetarian diet, avoiding refined foods, eating only enough calories to maintain your ideal weight, avoiding stimulants such as caffeine and related compounds, eating a good breakfast, eating 2 or at the most 3 meals per day, avoiding snacking, keeping your supper meal light or skipping it altogether, and drinking an abundance of water between meals, up to 8 glasses per day. If some of these points seem hard to accept, please note the thousands of medical references in my book Proof Positive that support these points. If you are not following a healthy lifestyle and are not willing to try it, you owe it yourself to see the positive proof of the merits of the dietary recommendations. The overwhelming evidence is there. Research demonstrates that such a nutritional program boosts energy levels and improves mental clarity. Improved mental function and physical stamina are key ingredients in enhancing your ability to deal with life stressors. A bonus provided by this program is that it also helps prevent chronic diseases like heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, and cancer. Regular physical exercise. Regular physical exercise is another vital component to a healthy lifestyle that will be a deterrent to stress. Long known to help stave off heart disease, stroke, and some types of cancer, regular exercise can also help protect against the physical effects of daily stress. Medical literature demonstrates that regular physical exercise is an important aid to mental health and stress control. Regular moderate exercise also appears to help the immune system, thus conceivably helping to offset stress-related immune suppression. Interestingly, mind-engaging exercises may have additional benefits. For example, Getting involved with some vigorous yard work, gardening, or chopping wood may prove even more beneficial than a walk. After all, you may unwittingly ponder your stress level while walking. Doing a practical physical task often requires more mental attention than walking or bicycling, making it less likely that you will engage in thoughts of your stress during your stress-relieving exercise. In a study of 135 college students, those who exercised on a regular basis were more likely to take life's daily stresses in stride, compared with their less physically active counterparts. Study participants filled out a questionnaire assessing the daily hassles they encountered during the past week, such as car trouble, running late for appointments, or arguments with coworkers. A second questionnaire listing their major life events, moods, physical activity, and overall health was also submitted. Highly stressed students who engaged in less exercise reported 21% more anxiety than students who exercised more frequently. Exercise helped them get their mind away from their stressors, providing a timeout period. Exercise can also be a short-term strategy for enhancing your body's stress coping capacities. When my patients encounter excessive stress, I instruct them to engage in some type of aerobic exercise at the very time that they are feeling the pressure. A 30-minute brisk walk in the fresh air, a run, or a bicycle ride can give you a new lease on life. Regular physical exercise is also beneficial in anxiety states. People who physically exercise on a regular basis experience less depression and anxiety. People who are already depressed or anxious will improve with regular physical exercise. The improvement is similar to the improvement experienced with medications, but without the side effects. Regarding physical symptoms, those who reported exercise less frequently during periods of high stress had 37% more physical symptoms of stress than their counterparts who exercised more often. Many other studies have shown the converse. That is, mental stress takes a toll on physical health. Examples of health problems related to stress are documented in the previous chapter. A study with laboratory rats looked at how physical activity affects the brain. Rats ran for exercise for 8 weeks before 90 minutes of stress exposure, and then were compared with rats that had not exercised before being exposed to stress. The results were that the rats that exercised regularly had lower levels of damaging protein in stress-related parts of their brain, released less norepinephrine, a stress hormone, and exercise appeared to help them recover more quickly from infections. The implication is that if you are a diligent exerciser and exposed to stress, your brain would be much better equipped to handle the situation than would the brain of a sedentary person. If you were a diligent exerciser and you cut your finger, you would heal faster than a non-exerciser. If you broke your leg, the bone would heal faster. If you contracted a virus, your immune system would work more efficiently to return you to health. Notice that none of these strategies for combating stress involves the use of drug medications. Massage. There's clear evidence that massage helps humans to deal with stress. The mechanism by which massage exerts its effects are not completely understood. What is not clear is whether those stress-relieving effects are due to the physical benefit of massage, physical contact with another supportive individual, or a combination of the two. Without knowing whether it works mostly on a physical or social level, I have arbitrarily placed it in the physical category. In one illuminating study, family members massaged children who were suffering from juvenile rheumatoid arthritis. Children with mild to moderate juvenile rheumatoid arthritis were massaged by their parents 15 minutes a day for 30 days, while a control group engaged in relaxation therapy. The children's anxiety and stress hormone, cortisol levels, were immediately decreased by the massage. Over the 30-day period, their pain decreased according to self-reports, parent reports, and their physician's assessment of pain, both the incident and severity. Pain-limiting activities were also increased. Massage also appears to benefit individuals who have primary psychiatric disorders. A 30-minute back massage was given for a 5-day period to 52 hospitalized children and adolescents with personality problems who were also depressed. Compared with a control group who viewed relaxing videotapes, the massage subjects were less depressed, less anxious, and had lower saliva cortisol levels after the massage. In addition, nurses rated the subjects as being less anxious and more cooperative on the last day of the study, and nighttime sleep increased over this period. Caffeine, it raises stress hormones. I continue to marvel that many patients who struggle with stress and anxiety have not yet made a break with caffeine. Due to society's acceptance of this drug, the issue is worth belaboring. The message needs to be heard. Caffeine directly raises stress hormones. The American Psychiatric Association says that caffeine-induced disorders of coffee drinkers may be characterized by panic attack symptoms that resemble primary mental disorders. Perhaps the greatest irony is that individuals may actually use caffeine to treat the results of stress-related problems. A wake-up cup of coffee may seem vital to a person struggling with stress-induced insomnia, yet the caffeine may be part of what is keeping the person up that night. I challenge every one of you who drinks caffeine to enjoy 2 weeks of caffeine-free living. Many who've tried it are amazed at the increased quality of their lives and become convinced that caffeine was doing much more to accentuate their stress problems than to help. The American Psychiatric Association also warns coffee drinkers of a malady called caffeine intoxication. This occurs shortly after drinking 2 to 3 cups of coffee within a few minutes of each other. 5 or more of the following signs will likely develop during or shortly after caffeine use: restlessness, nervousness, excitement, flushed face, diuresis, which is frequent urination, gastrointestinal disturbances, muscle twitching, rambling flow of thoughts and speech, cardiac arrhythmias, periods of hyperactive behavior, and psychomotor agitation. A caffeine addict should expect to experience withdrawal symptoms such as headache, sleepiness, laziness, and decreased alertness. They're usually more severe for only a day or two. In the following 5 days, they generally taper off and disappear. Alcohol, stress, and anxiety. Perhaps one of the most common self-treatment approaches for stress is an after-work drink. I wonder if this practice has taken on a new legitimacy as the result of what appears to be a strong publicity effort orchestrated by the alcohol industry to establish drinking as a healthful practice. However, according to recent research, nothing could be further from the truth when it comes to combating stress. Alcohol weakens our capability to cope with stress and anxiety by lowering the level of 3 hormones in the brain that are needed to cope with stress in several ways. The hormones are serotonin, GABA, and CRH. The first 2 hormones, serotonin and GABA, are beneficial in warding off anxiety. Animal studies reveal that heavy drinking can lower brain levels of important hormones like serotonin and GABA that help control anxiety. These same chemicals, together with another brain messenger, dopamine, when in abundance, help provide a sense of reward or pleasure. Consequently, alcohol may not only interfere with attempts to address anxiety, it may further undermine mood by increasing the risk of depressive symptoms. Animal researchers discovered that a high intake of alcohol weakens the hypothalamus' ability to release the key stress-activating hormone called corticotropin-releasing hormone, CRH. Research in human subjects has linked low levels of CRH with depressive problems. This has been studied in the relatively common condition called postpartum depression, where women sink into a depressive mood following the delivery of a child. Greater reduction of CRH following childbirth causes an increased risk for depression in the new mothers. Many may drink alcohol to seek relief from short-term stress. The reality is that the effects of alcohol are detrimental whether the stress is short-term or long-term. It can contribute to long-term anxiety and depression, and in the short term, it actually undermines the capability of the body to respond to stress. Minimizing drug medicine usage. What about drug medications? Are they of any help? Yes, there's a place for drug therapy. I do not advocate long-term reliance on drug therapies, and in my years of medical experience, I found that drugs are generally not a panacea for most conditions. I have great respect for the physiologists and pharmacologists who are helping us to better understand brain circuitry. Such studies are largely aimed at the development of new prescription drugs for treating mental illness and many other diseases. However, I feel it's important to discover what options exist with a form of non-toxic lifestyle therapies. Serotonin and melatonin provide perfect examples. We are not dependent on medications to boost levels of these vital brain chemicals. Sunlight exposure increases levels of serotonin in the brain. I devote an entire chapter in my book Proof Positive on how to increase melatonin levels naturally. Drug therapy, benzodiazepines. Benzodiazepines are one of the most common drug families used to treat stress and anxiety. Many popular anti-anxiety drugs are in this family. The list includes Xanax, Klonopin, Valium, Ativan, Paxapam, and Librium. Although these drugs may have a place in certain severe anxiety disorders, I mention them primarily to discourage their widespread use because of side effects. Benzodiazepines are associated with a host of risks, such as drowsiness, fatigue, dependency or addiction, risk of rebound symptoms, stomach and intestinal distress, impairment of performance, appetite stimulation, drug interactions, intolerance to alcohol, increased risk of injuries, birth defects, and respiratory problems. Other drugs with side effects. This long list of side effects for benzodiazepines does not mean they are worse than any other medication options. Benzodiazepines have been around for a long time, providing ample time to see their side effects firsthand. Newer drugs that have a shorter list of side effects may have no better track records after we have another 15 or 20 years to learn about all their side effects. The bottom line is that every drug medication has side effects. I have not highlighted these problems with benzodiazepines because they were the easiest target among the medications used for stress and anxiety. Benzodiazepines actually look mild when compared to monoamine oxidase inhibitors, MAOIs. Included in this class are drugs like Nardil and Parnate that are prescribed for depression, panic disorder, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Because of their high potential for serious side effects, they are usually used only when other medications are not effective. Individuals taking MAO drugs along with Prozac, a serotonin-blocking drug, have had fatal reactions. Serious interactions with a variety of common over-the-counter cough medications and decongestants can also occur. A list of other side effects of these drugs is provided in Chapter 6. There has been a rise in popularity of the newer classes of antidepressants known as selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. It is no doubt due in part to their frequent effectiveness in dealing with anxiety, yet with potentially fewer serious side effects than other medications used for anxiety and stress. Drugs in this class include Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Celexa, and Lavox. They are not without their problems. They can take up to 4 weeks before their full effect is demonstrated. During that delay, users may actually experience an increase in anxiety. In addition, SSRIs have a list of side effects of their own. They can be seen in Chapter 6. Although quite helpful for some types of anxiety disorders, SSRIs are either not helpful or are only marginally helpful for others. For example, when it comes to social phobias, SSRIs may help, but relapse is typical unless cognitive behavioral treatments are also employed. Long before SSRIs came to the scene, the tricyclic antidepressants, TCAs, were the mainstay of depression therapy. In addition to still being used in a variety of depressive disorders, TCAs are also used for certain stress-related symptoms, like insomnia, as well as certain anxiety disorders. The TCAs also carry with them an unenviable list of side effects that are listed in Chapter 6. I've not listed every drug that is used in the context of anxiety and other dysfunctional stress-related behaviors, but I have tried to provide you with enough information to underscore the adage that every drug has a side effect. This has motivated me to avoid medication therapies whenever possible. Indeed, in the context of this chapter, I can say that lifestyle measures should be the primary means used to control stress. This concludes the presentation of our attack against stress that involves our physical health. You've been listening to Part 1 of Chapter 8 in the book Depression the Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley, copyright 2014. To purchase this or other books by Dr. Nedley, or to learn more about the 10-day residential or 8-week community programs, visit www.nedleyhealthsolutions.com.